Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Iran's foreign minister says the United States lacked any initiative during the recent talks on the revival of the JCPOA in Doha. The International Federation of Journalists says it will join the lawsuit against Israel at the International Criminal Court over the killing of a veteran Palestinian journalist. And the U.S. state of Ohio witnesses protests after new footage emerged of police officers fatally shooting an unarmed black man multiple times. Hello and welcome. We are coming to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Iran's foreign minister says the recent indirect talks between Tehran and Washington and the Qatari capital for the revival of the 2015 deal had been positive. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remark in a phone call with his French counterpart, Catherine Colonna. He said the path of diplomacy for reaching an agreement is now open, advising the U.S. to take the opportunity. Amir Abdollahian underlined that Tehran is serious about achieving a good and lasting agreement on the deal known as the JCPOA. He, however, criticized Washington for not offering any initiative during the Doha talks. The top Iranian diplomat said Iran has always been committed to its obligations under the deal and expects the other sides to do the same. The French foreign minister, for her part, said all sides must strive for a deal agreeable to all of them. Colonna added the window of diplomacy is still open. Iran is wrapping up the Week of American Human Rights. The annual occasion marks a series of tragic incidents that killed Iranian people and statesmen where the U.S. was directly or indirectly involved. Yusuf Jalali reports from Tehran.
Highlighting the United States' rights violations at the former U.S. Embassy in Tehran, which the Islamic Republic calls the Den of Espionage. Every year in late June and early July, Iranian activists get together to commemorate what they call the American Human Rights Week, to recount instances of U.S. rights abuses in Iran.
United States, who is, you know, shouting the human right, we think that this is just a, you know, slogan without any background. And because when it's go to the Iranian people, we have seen that these people have been targeted, and we do not receive any apology about that.
The week-long occasion marks a series of tragic incidents, all falling within the same time frame, killing hundreds of Iranians in the early years after the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Rights activists say in all of those instances, the footprints of the U.S. can be traced. One of the most tragic incidents was the 1988 shooting down of an Iranian airliner by the U.S. Navy, which killed all of the 290 people on board the doomed plane. More than three decades on, and Iran is still waiting for an apology from Washington. Rights activists believe the U.S. has not abandoned its double standards regarding human rights.
We know that more than 30 countries have received the negative sanctions from the United States. Sanction is something that violates the human rights, the right of the development, right of the education, right of the health.
The American Human Rights Week also marks the 1981 bombing of the headquarters of Iran's Islamic Republic Party, carried out by the formidable Mujahideen-e-Khalq terrorist organization, known as the MKO. 73 leading officials, including the then Justice Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Beheshti, were killed in the blast. The Islamic Republic says the MKO is responsible for killing 12,000 Iranians in different terror attacks. In 2012, the U.S. and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist entity, and since then, they have been taking part in the terror group's annual summits in Paris.
They have withdrawn the MKO from the blacklist, and this withdrawal paved the way for the Americans, not only for the Americans, but also for the MKO to extend their own terrorist operations through the facilities that they are provided from the Americans and also from the European territories.
The 1987 chemical bombardment of Iran's city of Sanadasht is another incident that falls on the same period in the Iranian calendar. Iraq's chemical weapons were reportedly produced using materials supplied by the U.S. and other Western countries.
Activists here say Washington has shrugged off its crimes in Iran, and that's why they observe the American Human Rights Week every year to take a jab at the U.S. for its selective approach toward human rights. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The International Federation of Journalists says it will be a partner in a lawsuit filed against the Israeli regime at the International Criminal Court. The case was brought following the murder in May of veteran Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aghla by the regime's troops in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. The journalists' syndicate says it has succeeded in exposing Israel's acts of aggression against media professionals and the Palestinian people. The Attorney General of the Palestinian Authority has confirmed that an Israeli soldier was behind the killing of Abu Aghla. Last month, Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki handed the ICC prosecutor the official outcome of the Palestinian investigation into the journalist's killing. The top diplomat has demanded criminals responsible for targeting civilians, children, women, journalists, doctors, and other protected groups be brought to justice at the International Court. A young Palestinian man has succumbed to the wounds he suffered during clashes with Israeli forces. 19-year-old Kamal Abdullah Alavna came from the northern occupied West Bank city of Jenin. He was shot in the abdomen and right hand after Israeli forces raided the Flashpoint city on Saturday. Kamal was named after his brother, who was also killed by Israeli forces in 2003. At least 77 Palestinians, including 15 children, have been killed by the regime forces this year, 28 of them in Jenin. Israeli forces regularly carry out raids to allegedly make arrests in populated Palestinian communities. The raids have grown more violent and frequent since a number of deadly anti-Israeli operations in recent months. A Ramah Loh correspondent, Munar Andil, says the young Palestinian killed by Israeli troops in Jenin was shot both in the stomach and in the arm. Take a listen.
Well, Israeli forces raided the village of Jaba in Jenin yesterday, and there were clashes between Israeli forces and Palestinian youths, according to our sources there. Kamal Alawni, 19-year-old Palestinian, was shot in the stomach and his arm, and he was transferred to Ibn Sina Hospital. Today, he succumbed to his injuries. And as you have mentioned, Kamal was named, after his brother. Kamal Alawni, his brother, was shot dead by the Israeli forces in 2003. Then his mother, named the other child also, Kamal Alawni. Today, it's a tragic, of course, incident for this Palestinian family and the mother to lose two of her sons having the same name. As you have mentioned, over 77 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli troops since the beginning of this year. Almost 50 Palestinians were shot dead by the Israeli soldiers since March up till the day, including children.
Protesters march in Akron in the U.S. state of Ohio after police footage showed officers fatally shot an unarmed black man multiple times. The protesters marched on the city's municipality to demand justice for the victim, Jalen Walker. Officers fired around 60 bullets at the 25-year-old after chasing him for a minor traffic violation last week. The newly released police footage shows Walker running away when he is gunned down. Walker's killing is the latest in a string of fatal shootings and racial profiling of African Americans by the police. The protests turned into a major social unrest in 2020 after the killing of George Floyd sparked protests against racial injustice both inside and outside the U.S. Intense fighting is raging in eastern Ukraine, with Russia saying its forces are now in full control of Lysychansk. The city is Ukraine's last remaining stronghold in the Luhansk region. A short while earlier, the Russian Defense Ministry reported that its forces were fighting Ukrainian troops inside the city after capturing the surrounding villages. With Lysychansk in their hands, Russian troops will be able to move further into the Donbass region. Just last week, they captured Severodonetsk, another major city in the east. Meantime, in Russia's border city of Belgorod, three people have been killed and several others wounded in several blasts. So far, no reactions from Kiev. The UK might join Canada in handing over Russian assets to Ukraine. London now mulls a plan to seize the assets of Russia to give them to either Ukrainian victims of the war or the Ukrainian state. British media reports say Foreign Secretary Liz Truss is supportive of the idea that frozen Russian assets be redistributed to the victims of Russia's war in Ukraine. Late last month, Canada decided to seize the assets of sanctioned Russian individuals and companies and use them to compensate victims of the Ukraine war. That is, in addition to several rounds of sanctions placed on Russia by Canada and other Western governments. NATO countries and Russia have been fighting an information war over events in Ukraine, while major Western media outlets are focused on the loss of life and damage from Russia's military campaign. There are Western journalists who are offering an alternative view of the events. Johnny Miller reports on a German journalist facing jail for reporting Ukrainian atrocities in the country's east. Here's more.
Alina Lipp, a German journalist who has been reporting from the pro-Russian Donbass region of Ukraine for over 6 months. She recently received charges from the German legal system threatening her with 3 years in jail.
On 24th of February, I shared on my Telegram channel the news that Ukraine is killing civilians already for 8 years. And I also said that this is a genocide and that people here in Donbass support the special operation of Russia. And this is a criminal act for Germany.
But Ukraine has been killing civilians here for 8 years. That's just, I think, controversial.
That's a fact. I'm filming here for half a year now, and I'm living in Donetsk, and I'm hearing all the day this shelling around me, and this is not Russia.
And the other one, it says there is that you said that most people here support the separatists. That's a fact as well.
That's a fact, yeah, of course.
A few days after Alina's charge sheet was issued, the main German TV channel ARD ran a story reporting that the Russian army was bombing Donetsk, but they weren't. It was the Ukrainian army. The next day, the channel published a retraction and apology. It's not clear how many people who saw the report also saw the retraction.
The courts have also taken €1,600 out of Alina's bank account, money given to her by members of the public who are appreciative of her work. They also say that she is not allowed to defend herself at a hearing. Now, I've read the document, and the only conclusion I can draw from it is that either the German courts are trying to prosecute honest journalists, or that, frankly, they don't have even the most basic grasp of international politics. I'm not sure which one is more damaging to the credibility of the German legal system.
They just want to put me in prison for 3 years, but not hear me out. I mean, what... It's unbelievable. And especially they open this case because I'm sharing my opinion. So there's no free speech anymore in Germany.
Luis Cervera, an independent Spanish-Russian journalist who has been reporting on the suffering of the Donbass people at the hands of the Ukrainian army.
At first, I received a lot of hate comments, hate in general. Then I received also harassment from different people, pursued me. They published my phone number, all my private information. They even published an address of a flat where I used to live.
While Julian Assange faces the prospect of spending the rest of his life in jail, he is not the only journalist under threat of imprisonment for telling the truth. Alina, like many other independent journalists, have been deplatformed from some social media outlets and has had her PayPal account suspended. Anti-war sites Consortium News and Mint Press have also had their PayPal accounts suspended in an attempt to cut off funding.
The job of a journalist is to uncover stories so that society can debate and implement policy based on their findings. Now, while mainstream outlets don't even send reporters to this part of Ukraine, the few Western reporters who are here risk their lives and their reputations to uncover important truths. For that, they risk being deplatformed, smeared, or sent to jail simply for doing their job. There's increasingly a worrying campaign by tech companies, governments, and courts to strangle anti-war dissent in the West. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
In Berlin, hundreds of people march into the streets to discourage the German government from intervention in the Ukraine war.
Deutsches Geld, Polen, Pitt, Geld, The demonstrators carried banners denouncing armed supplies to Ukraine as well as nuclear weapons. Germany has offered substantial support to Ukraine, sending billions of dollars in military aid and heavy weaponry. That's in line with a policy adopted by certain Western governments to support Ukraine. Those governments include France, Britain, Canada, and Spain. The United States has so far allocated nearly $7 billion to military assistance for Ukraine. Russia has always warned such arms deliveries would only fuel the flames of war. Moscow has cut gas exports to Italy by 15%. The Italian government has played down the consequences of Russia's decision, but there are serious concerns among people about surging energy prices. In Australia, thousands of Sydney's residents will have to leave their homes as flooding hits southeastern parts of the city. More than 200 millimeters of rain have been recorded in many areas. As a result, local dams and rivers are starting to spill. The Weather Bureau is warning of a serious risk of flash floods and landslides. Officials are asking people to avoid unnecessary travels. The government says the emergency services and military troops are on standby to help people. The rainfall will continue for at least the next 2 days. Well, that's a wrap for this edition of World News. V, thanks for your company. Stay with us.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. It's a few minutes to the call to prayer, and I'm late. My grandma and I are going to perform Maghrib and Isha prayers in a beautiful mosque in our neighborhood. My prayers mat is ready, and this is my chador for prayers.
I have to rush. Before I forget, tomorrow I'll make a trip to Isfahan in order to take a tour to one of the invaluable treasures of Iran, the Jame Mosque of Isfahan. The Jame Mosque of Isfahan, which is also known as the Jame Mosque of Atiq or the Friday Mosque of Isfahan, is one of the historical monuments of the city of Isfahan, which dates back to the 2nd century AH. However, the mosque is older than the date cited, and archaeologists have found relics dating back to the Sasanid era. The discovery of one pillar, with the decorations which date back to the Sasanid era, located in the northern part of the mosque, represents the fact that this monument dates back to the pre-Islamic era. In fact, the Jame Mosque of Isfahan was formed during 2,000 years and has been finally transformed into the current shape. The Jame Mosque of Isfahan is a museum for itself because inside it you can find monuments dating back to the Sasanid, Abbasid, Daylamite, Buyid, Seljuqid, Safavid and Qajarid dynasties. The most important development projects of this mosque was done during the Buyid dynasty and after that during the Safavid era. The current appearance of the mosque, mostly related to its development, was done during the Seljuqid era. However, the repairs and attachments were done later during other historical eras, particularly during the Safavid era. The Jame Mosque of Isfahan is located in the old part of the city of Isfahan. I am now in Allame Majlisi Street. I have to walk a few blocks to reach the mosque. By the way, the mausoleum of Allame Majlisi, who was one of the prominent ulema of the Safavid era, is situated in the area of the mosque. That is why this street is called Allame Majlisi. And I am now in the area of the Jame Mosque of Isfahan. Oh, these beautiful blue and azure tiles make one quite excited, as if the sky has come down. The design of this mosque is for Ivan design. This design is completely Iranian. The name of these beautiful Ivans are as follows. Sofeye Sahib in the south, Sofeye Darvish in the north, Sofeye Ostad in the west, and Sofeye Shagird in the east. I'll get closer to see the details. I am now in the southern Ivan of the mosque, just beneath the dome and the 40 pillars around. This magnificent dome is made of bricks and plaster and dates back to the Seljuqid era. It's true, they say that the Jame Mosque of Isfahan and the areas around tell us the story of people who used to live in the era of Seljuqids. I am now in Sofeye Shagird. This Ivan doesn't have tilework decorations and instead is adorned by brickmade Mugharnas. Oh my god, these Mugharnas works are a masterpiece. In this Ivan, there is a piece of rich, integrated marble stone with inscriptions around and above it. I am now in the northern part of Ostad Ivan. Here there is a small shabistan which has the most beautiful plaster work mihrab in the world. This mihrab, which is the masterpiece of Iranian art, shines like a gem. In order to protect this mihrab, it is put in a glass guard. Though from the distance I am standing, the beauties of this mihrab is completely visible. The Jame Mosque of Isfahan is very beautiful and wonderful. Be sure that later during this series, I'll come back to this mosque in order to talk about the details of the mosque for you. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The U.S. track record on human rights is not representative of the democracy that the U.S. preaches. Both within and outside the U.S., a quick history check shows how successive U.S. governments have violated human rights, especially when it comes to the Islamic Republic of Iran. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at some instances where the U.S. was responsible for human rights abuses which led to deaths in Iran, from chemical attack deaths to the downing of an Iranian passenger jet, which led to the deaths of 298 passengers. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Sarah Flounders joins us. She's the co-director of the International Action Center, who joins us from New York. Also joining us is Olsi Jazekci, who's a historian and journalist, who joins us from Tirana.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you for both of you for joining us in this edition of The Spotlight. Let me first start with you, Sarah Flounders. The Iranian Foreign Ministry just recently has accused the U.S. of many times the similar accusations have been made in the past for using human rights, as the foreign ministry said, as a tool for violating the rights of the Iranian people. And it went and said it denouncing the unilateral economic sanctions imposed by the U.S. as what it termed a brazen violation of international law and human rights. Does the foreign ministry of Iran have a point?
Well, he certainly does. First of all, sanctions themselves are a violation of human rights. It really is an effort to impose famine and economic dislocation on entire populations. But also, the U.S. uses human rights in the most hypocritical and cynical way. It's not even serious in the way in which they treat it, because they openly arm terrorist organizations around the world, including against Iran. As we know, the Mujahideen Khalq for decades has been armed, funded, trained by the U.S. But this is true whether we're looking at Nazis in Ukraine or terrorist groups against Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Around the world, the U.S. uses terror organizations, while at the same time, there's no such concept even of human rights here at home, where there's the largest prison population in the world, and where the U.S. refuses to sign conventions for the rights of children, rights against discrimination of women, against conventions against torture and degradation in the prisons. So whether we're talking about Guantanamo or the crimes committed against the Iranian people, it's really too numerous, and it is a cynical tool usually used to impose sanctions or some other form of U.S. intervention. It's just a public relations tool.
Sure. Well, there's the area of violations that are taking place are vast. Of course, many countries are guilty of human rights violations, but when you have the police of the world, as the U.S. would like for it to be known for, makes claims against other countries when it's a violator itself, then obviously that's what we're zooming in on in this program. Now, we're looking here, Olsi Jazakshi, at some who are saying, well, coming from Iran, that's just not the case. We're not going to believe what the Islamic Republic says when it comes to human rights. But just very recently, Iran was host to UN rapporteur, a top human rights official, who came to Iran and did a review and investigation. And basically, it came out and said that sanctions, U.S. sanctions, kill, point blank, adding that the U.S. is responsible for its brutal sanctions regime against the Islamic Republic, that harsh economic sanctions have had a damaging impact on the rights of Iranians in the country. So when you have the U.N. Special Human Rights Rapporteur come out and make a statement like that, then hopefully that will make the situation be driven home for the ones who are non-believers. What is your reaction to this report that came out by the U.N. Rapporteur?
Well, Iran is not the first country who's been victimized by the U.S. government in the Middle East. Actually, what we are seeing with the sanctions against Iran, we have a deja vu or a repetition of what the Americans did against Iraq in 1990s. It is the same scenario. There is a clear-cut strategy of the U.S. government towards countries in the Middle East. So all these countries who do not accept the Israeli apartheid and what the Israeli regime does to native Palestinians is condemned to sanctions, war, and regime change. Exactly the same thing happened in Iraq after the first Gulf War, when we had around 500,000 Iraqi children who died because the sanctions that the Americans and the British put on Iraq. We have seen the same story in Libya, in Somalia, in Sudan, and in Syria. I mean, U.S. foreign policy is not guided by human rights, but is guided by the request of the Israeli government to totally wipe out the Middle East from any independent government which stands up and speaks for the right of the native Palestinians. I mean, U.S. government is the last country in this world which can speak about human rights, because they are the fanatical supporters of the most aggressive, inhuman, barbaric, medieval regime of the Middle East, which is the Israeli government. They keep the Palestinians like slaves in a zoo.
Right.
They have taken over their country. They do not allow them to participate in elections, and they simply kill them. And the only reason why the U.S. government is attacking Iran is not human rights, is not the kind of system that Iran has. It is principle, because Iran is standing for the human rights of the Muslims and the Palestinians.
Sure. Well, the fact that the U.S. actually supports the Israeli regime there, Sarah Flounders, is really telling in terms of what it stands for, because it's allowing the regime there in the occupied territories. For example, the way that the U.S. really just kind of swept under the rug this assassination of that Palestinian journalist. But let's zoom in on one of the key words that our guest there from Tirana said, and that was, if I understood him correctly, the change of government. That's something that the U.S. has been involved with when it comes to Iran. And even the foreign ministry came out and said that the U.S. unilateralism and imposition of economic sanctions with the aim, I'm quoting, of forcing governments to change their policies is a gross and systematic violation of human rights. Well, the U.S. has done that. You can tell us what the most prominent example is. And I think to this day, that is perhaps one of their foreign policy objectives.
Well, first of all, that's exactly the purpose of sanctions. It is an effort to use the most brutal forms to completely destroy a government that has popular support. That's its purpose. And today there are U.S. sanctions against more than 40 countries. A third of the world population is under some form, some with hundreds and hundreds of pieces of legislation, others with just a few. But in every single case, it is meant to be an act of destabilization, hyperinflation, and an attempt to create famine, basic medical shortages of the most essential medicines. This is the purpose of sanctions, and the U.S. is completely clear about it. And as we remember that famous quote from Madeleine Albright, asked if the death of 500,000 Iraqi children was worth it, she said, yes, we think it's worth it. So this is how they measure human rights. They assert the right to impose such terrible crimes against the whole population, and at the same time to assassinate leaders and scientists and prominent people. I mean, this is really an outrageous. And it is at the same time, yes, the police in the U.S. and the Israeli police, they exchange training missions. They use the same tactics against the population here and the Palestinian people. Mm-hmm. They refine their tactics in the worst ways, where the violence and the brutality. Here in the U.S., we face 3 police murders a day, every day. And this is true year after year. More than 1,000 police killings a year in the U.S. of unarmed civilians. This is overwhelmingly also a racist weapon. And okay.
Before we came in, Sarah Flounders, for this, there was a press conference about a certain incident that took place in the U.S. that involved the police and somebody that they had found, which I don't want to get into now, because I have to get to 3 points that I need to make about Iran.
Right.
I'll get to that point, and I'll ask you that question. But it's very sad that today is the anniversary of the Iranian airliner, Olsi Jazakshi, that Iran is marking. Iran is not going to forget that incident. 298 passengers and crew members on board were killed when the U.S. Navy guided missile cruiser destroyed that plane, along with the passengers that died as a result. We still, to this day, do not have a clear message coming from the U.S. in a form of an apology, because that is something they don't want to resort to. I'm not too sure why. And that's one of the issues that I want to ask your reaction of when you have this incident come back into the limelight through us here in Iran. What do you think about this incident that took place and the way that the U.S. handled it?
Well,
it was absolutely...
No, this is for our guest there in Tirana. Go ahead.
The U.S. government has been at war with Iran since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. The removal of the Shah from power, who was a puppet of U.S. and Israel, destroyed the hegemonic Israeli plans for the Middle East that the Americans and Israelis had planned. And we all know what happened. I mean, immediately after the Islamic Revolution, the Americans, they pushed the Wahhabi monarchies and Saddam Hussein to a bloody war with Iran. And when they could not do that, they have done countless crimes public. The passenger airplane by the U.S. military is neither the first nor the last. I mean, for people who live in Europe and even in Asia in this very moment, we know the horrible life that Iranians suffer throughout planet. I mean, from Thailand to Albania, to Italy, to Indonesia, throughout the world, Iranian citizens are being harassed. Let me give you an example from Albania. On orders by Israel, and of course the Americans do their job, we have hundreds of Iranians who have been deported from the country where I am in. Their bank accounts have been closed and so forth. I mean, the U.S. government is in an open war with the Iranian people, and the only reason for this is because the Iranians are standing up for Islam and for Palestine. So, I mean, the Americans, I mean, this is a war, and we have to accept it. And there are no human rights in cases of war. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we compare the situation in Iran with the situation in the favorite country for the Americans, Israel, it is like day and night. In Iran, you have a democracy, you have an open system of elections, while in Israel, you have an apartheid state. And I mean, it is open, and each and every person indeed. Who starts political science and history understands that.
So I'm wondering here, Sarah Flanders, what the Iran is supposed to think when you have a gathering that happens in Paris every year, where you have a group that comes onto stage led by a woman in which has been accused of brainwashing the people that are part of that cult, and at the same time has been responsible in previous years and to this day for the deaths of thousands of Iranians. And the name of that cult is the MKO, endorsed by U.S. politicians, and it has access actually to many European officials as well. What is the Islamic Republic supposed to think when the U.S. is out in the open supporting that through various officials or ex-officials also?
Well, I think the Iranian people well know the absolute hypocrisy. And it's criminal to the extent of actually supporting terrorist groups like Mujahideen Khalq. I mean, how can, and yet it goes on again and again. This was an organization, even the United States, called a terrorist organization. That didn't stop them from supporting it and funding and arming it and giving it endless publicity. So there's no sincerity anytime the word human rights are used. The U.S. State Department files a human rights report on 198 countries around the world, in other words, every country except itself. It's the refusal to ever look at its conduct internationally or internally that we see the greatest, and I do want to say one thing, even in time of war, according to the Geneva Nuremberg Conventions, there are rights, human rights, that have been agreed to that the U.S. violates. The number one right that has been signed again and again in treaty is that civilians never be a target of war. Even in the midst of a conflagration, civilians not be a target. And yet that is a deliberate U.S. target. And that's why they fund terrorist organizations, whether against Iran or against Ukraine, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan. They use organizations that create mass terror intentionally.
Right. Well,
against civilians.
Another example that needs to be highlighted here is what happened in Sardasht. Olsi Jazakshi, that incident where Iran was a victim of the use of chemical weapons, More than 13,000 people have died. It could be a lot more because you're still seeing people that are dying because of it. The latest stats in terms of that show 100,000 were injured and are still experiencing side effects from that. But even though there were mostly European countries that were part of that support that they gave the Saddam Hussein regime, the United States was also involved. That type of exercise of a violation of human rights, to say the least, is also somewhat reflected upon how they used Agent Orange in Vietnam, in a sense, and also, of course, the ultimate, which was the dropping of the nuclear bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Why do you think the U.S., the people in the U.S., in the highest places in government, make decisions so drastic that it leads to the deaths of so many in this form and manner?
To put it simple, is that there is no American government in U.S. The government of the United States is run by a foreign power, and that is Israel. And if I can put something here into the discussion of human rights that Sarah Flanders mentioned, every year when U.S. government issues its report about human rights and terrorism about my country, where I am here in Albania, they tend to ignore the gross human rights violations that the Mujahideen al-Halq military command does against common Mujahideen soldiers who want to escape into freedom and abandon violent jihad. We have every week scandals here in Albania. We have people from the Mujahideen army of Mariam Rajavi, people who fought against Iran and who were fedayeens of Saddam Hussein, who want to escape into freedom. But what does the American government, instead of respecting the human rights of these poor soldiers who are being held as captives by Mariam Rajavi command, they have forced even the Albanian government through its police to support Mariam Rajavi on abusing her slave soldiers. Many of the commanders that Mariam Rajavi has here in Albania have been complicit, and they have supported Saddam Hussein in his war against Iran. We had the ex-vice president of the United States, Mike Pence, who came to Albania a few weeks ago. And guess what? He was received by a war criminal, a person who led the Karun tank division of the Mujahideens, a notorious tank division that was used by Saddam Hussein to crush and kill the Kurds. And this man, whose name is Farid Mahuchi, after coming to Albania, have changed his name into Farid Tutunji. He was the person who received the vice president of the United States. This person, he's wanted in Iraq for war crimes, for massacring Kurds. And what happens? The U.S. government, the ex-vice president of the United States, goes and meets him and makes pictures with a war criminal.
Indeed.
So what human rights can you expect?
Exactly.
From the U.S.
Who knows? He might be a future presidential candidate for the U.S. Okay, so I'm going to come to you with that incident that I told you that I was going to come and ask you, Sarah Flanders. And it's really shocking, quite shocking, the way that this incident actually happened. But it goes in line with what the U.S. has been accused of in terms of violation of human rights. And this was done by various reports, including the UN, that it's violating the human rights of black people by failing to restrict the use of deadly force. And this was accused, the 50 states and Washington, D.C. were accused of this, where they failed to comply with international law and standards. Now, we had this incident where a black person, for failing to stop at a traffic stop, was killed with 60 gunshot wounds. 60. Now, I'm not too sure what's going on there when it comes to police brutality against African Americans, but when you look at an excessive incident of gunshot wounds to have killed this particular person, how is it that the U.S., at a minimum, comes out and preaches other countries when it comes to human rights?
Well, again, it shows cynicism and hypocrisy and racism and racist arrogance, the sheer number of police killings, racist killings, and 60 shots means that, you know, 4 in 5 policemen literally emptied their guns into this man. I mean, there's no way to explain the level of racist right. violence that is everyday reality.
Indeed.
In the
U.S. Unfortunately,
when
I have to jump in because we're fresh out of time, but I had to get that question in. I do apologize, Sarah Flounders. Thank you, though, for your input. Co-director of the International Action Center, Olsi Zekci, historian and journalist from Tirana. Thank you for your comments. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikava Tahwei and the team, it's goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to IRB English Radio. This is Asma, your humble host for today's episode, and you're hearing me from Q&A on Islamic belief, in which you'll get the answers to all your questions. So let's start, but before that, I'd like our guest to introduce himself to us.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Sheikh Noor Muhammad. I'm very happy to be here.
And I'm very glad to meet you here. Well, there's this verse in the Holy Quran, which is a little bit of controversial for every single one who just looks at that or reads that or get across that, which says that Allah shall guide whomever he wishes into the right path and whomever he wishes into the wrong path. Shall you just give us an explanation on that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, we have in different verses of Noble Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that, for example, chapter Muddathir, verse number 31, كَذَلَكِ يُذِلُّ اللَّهُ مَنْ يَشَاءُ وَيَهْدِي مَنْ يَشَاءُ. Thus does Allah lead astray whomever he wishes and guide whomever he wishes. And of course, we have in some other verses of Noble Quran, Allahu yahdi man yasha'u ila siratin mustaqim. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, guides some people to the right path. Or for example, in chapter Mu'min, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that, كَذَلِكِ يُظِلُّ اللَّهُ الْكَافِرِينَ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, lead astray whomever, he wishes, and lead astray the, unbeliever. كَذَلِكِ يُذِلُّ اللَّهُ الْكَافِرِينَ. كَذَلِكِ يُذِلُّ اللَّهُ مَنْ هُوَ مُسْرِفٌ مُرْتَابٌ. In chapter Mu'min, verse number 34, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala lead astray those people who are,
usually it's been given the clue that they are non-believers.
Yes, maybe non-believers and those people who have some doubts with regards to the verses of the Noble Quran. You see that in different verses, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks about the leading some people astray. Or, for example, guide some people. So what does it mean? Let me talk in the beginning about the guiding of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, about the guidance. You see that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given all human beings, as I mentioned in some other episode, two, let's say, proof. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The faculty of reason and the other which was the Holy Quran and the Prophet.
Yes, the faculty of reason, you know, which we call it Quwwa Aqila. And beside that, the faculty of the, let's say, the God-given nature, which we call it Fitra. So we have this Fitra and we have this wisdom and faculty of reasoning. If individual and any other human being follow up his or her faculty, okay, and to choose, again, to choose to go to the right path, you know, according to the these two faculties, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will add to that.
Will help them.
Yes. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give those people other, you know, guidance.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Just as we say that if you take one step, he's going to take 10 steps for you.
Exactly. Exactly. We have this proverb. You know, in other verses, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that وَالَّذِينَ اهْتَدَوْا ذَادَهُمْ هُدَىٰ. For those people who have, you know, chosen to be righteous people, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will add to their guidance. Okay? So, first of all, as you mentioned, it is first step is upon you. You have to choose.
Yes.
You have different choices. Of course, we have temptation of Satan. We have the invitation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we have these two choices. But if you choose to be from among the servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to choose the guidance of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will add to your guidance.
Mm-hmm. Okay? It's just like he would bless you with more of power.
Yeah. And let me say that it is endless. This is endless. I want to say that whatever you choose to get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala make himself, you know, more manifested to you and more closer to you.
Exactly.
It means that he showers you with lots of guidance.
Yes.
You see? And it is endless, limitless.
Yes.
Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has no limits. On the other hand, let's talk about the about the yudhillullahu man yasha. I think it's clear. Because if you choose the satanic temptation and to astray from the right path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, so again, it's your personal choice. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give away further guidance out of you. Make it away from you. Okay,
it's just like there's a light inside of you and you choose the wrong path and then that light is off and is no longer working inside you.
Exactly. He will leave you on your own. Exactly. Yes. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will leave you on your own. Okay. Exactly.
So I guess that we should sort of paraphrase that verse into this phrase that whatever you choose for yourself, God is going to help you through that.
Exactly.
So it's not just like because when we go through that verse, this the idea, the concept of being fair or unfair comes to our mind. You know, just literally when you go through it, you would say that, okay, then God is doing this to me. Yeah. So what happens to my free will?
Exactly. I want to say that, you know, your, you know, about the guidance is exactly what you mentioned. Okay. When we choose to go to the right path, to the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will add to that. Okay,
yes.
We'll give you many other guidance and blessings.
We'll boost our powers.
Exactly. On the other hand, when some people, they choose to go to the, you know, satanic temptations, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will leave them on their own. Okay, mm-hmm. He does not, you know, give you further blessing and further guidance.
And it does not happen very quickly because God is very patient.
Of course, very patient. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
He gives you so much of chances, but in the end, when you